Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Here on the hump day edition of the yard, as you can tell, I'm feeling better. Not quite 100%, but we're feeling better. We will be game ready come first pitch on Thursday. Speaking of that, you're not going to have a Friday show. What I've decided to do is I'm going to wait until we get back. I'll get back Saturday around midnight. We'll try to do the show Sunday morning. Have an opportunity to kind of break down the bracket. We'll preview that, and then we'll still get three shows for you next week. But I just didn't want to do a Friday show just to do a Friday show. We'll do something a little more timely on Sunday. We'll have the A&M series behind us. We'll be able to see the totality of the SEC weekend, and we'll talk about the bracket and kind of break down what needs to happen in Hoover for Mississippi State to potentially host an NCAA regional or perhaps more. We just don't know yet. We got a big weekend ahead of us. We're going to break down Texas A&M. We're going to look ahead at the SEC weekend to come, and also too just kind of look at what maybe Tuesday's results did. We got a little help there. We actually moved up a spot in the RPI. We'll talk a little bit about that, and we'll look at your rooting interest around the country. Yeah, so college baseball loaded show for you. Excited you're with us. You could be anywhere in the world tonight, but you're here with us. We appreciate that. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. We love Bulldog Burger Company, and we have for a long, long time. There's just so much consistency, right? I don't like to put a lot of guesswork when it comes to lunch and dinner, especially when I'm home in Starkville. I stick with the winners. I stick with the Eat With Us group just because of the fact that I know when I go and put my feet under their table or when I get something to go, it's going to be both nourishing, it's going to be satisfying, it's going to be well prepared, it's going to be well packaged. I don't have to worry about that meal. Again, whether I'm eating in-house or taking it to go, they know how to feed me and you. Bulldog Burger Company, part of the Eat With Us group here in the Golden Triangle that has served us for so many years. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. Find your own favorites. I'm still very partial to that Black Label Smash, to be quite honest with you. It's a great value. It's a very good tasting burger. Many of you are somewhat new to Smash Burgers. I think that's all the rage these days. So it only makes sense that an innovative company like Bulldog Burger Company would have a couple of smash burgers for you. Some of you guys might want that triple smash. You might. It'll put some hair on your chest. It will. Get the chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. And again, three great locations to serve you. University Drive, Sark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harper Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Bulldog Burger Company. The place where people go to meet, M-E-A-T. Okay, one of the things that I don't think most people in college baseball understand. Guys, Mississippi State and Texas A&M have had almost identical seasons. But the national college baseball media would make you think that A&M is leaps and bounds better than Mississippi State. Well, we're going to find out for sure this weekend. Before we get into that, so right now, Texas A&M is 10 in the RPI. Mississippi State is 11 in the RPI. A&M has won 16 SEC games. Mississippi State's won 50. Mississippi State has won 38 regular season games. A&M has won 37. State strength of schedule is 9. A&M is 25. State's non-conference RPI is 5. Texas A&M is 21. Mississippi State 9-11 against the Quad 1. A&M 12-11. They have one Quad 3 loss. We have none. Neither of us have a Quad 4 loss. And so you look at the resumes, they're actually very similar. But because of the fact A&M right now is currently second in the SEC, you know, that game and a half makes a big difference because they didn't play game three against Texas. And we never know how that would have worked out. But A&M ambushed Texas those first two games. And that's one of the things that kind of helps them in the APR. But again, I mean the RPI, but they're right there together. But if you read the college baseball media commentary, they'll tell you, hey, you know, Mississippi State, you know, should host, but A&M is fighting for a top eight national seed. Well, so is Mississippi State. And I think a lot of people have kind of like assumed A&M is going to win this series. I'm not so sure. All right, let's break down the Aggies here. They opened up with a three-game set against Tennessee Tech. They swept all three of those games, and none of them were competitive. 15-6, 23-7 in seven innings, and 7-1 in the finale. They get A&M Corpus Christi the first midweek. They get that. They struggled with Penn. Do you remember this? It's been so long ago. They struggled significantly, but they still swept the series. And I think that's one of the reasons people forget. They won 1-0, 2-1 in 11 innings. Had to walk those games off. And then, if I remember correctly, and then they went 7-1. But it's like, hey, you win, so you just kind of move on, right? They blast Lamar 25-5 and 7. Then they went to Arlington the same weekend we did. That's our first look at them. They beat Virginia Tech 10-0. And Virginia Tech canceled a game against Marshall this weekend trying to make the tournament. UCLA mercy ruled A&M 11-1. And then they get Arizona State 9-3. So they go 2-1 in Arlington. So did we. We played a much more competitive game against UCLA than they did, but a loss is a loss. They blast Incarnate Word 11-1. They get Oakland, not the A's, the college Oakland team, 6-3, 10-2, 12-1, and 7. Then they blast Stephen F. Austin 14-1. You get an SEC play. They lose game one at Oklahoma 8-7. They bounce back, win 9-5, and then lose the Sunday game 12-11. So three fairly competitive games, and they lose two of the three. Texas State, a team that a lot of people thought was a very solid mid-major that is dropping like a rock in the RPI. They get them 9-6. Then you get the Georgia game, right? They lose to Georgia 9-4, 8-2. And then they bounce back and win game three against Georgia 18-5, right? So they salvage one. Well, which we could have. If we had, we would be having a different conversation today. They get Houston Christian 5-1. Then it's Missouri. They travel to Missouri. And again, you start thinking about, you go to Oklahoma, not an intimidating environment. You go to Missouri, not an intimidating environment. And you sweep those three games. You get the benefit of playing the last place team in the league, 11-9, 14-6, 14-3. You get Sam Houston, another mercy rule game, right? And that's the thing today, kind of trump their non-conference record and stuff. But, guys, people talk about some of our fans criticize our non-conference opponent. Look at who they're playing. 16-2 is the final over Sam Houston State in 7. And then Vanderbilt. They get 2 out of 3 from Vandy and College Station. They drop game 1, 14-8, and then they bounce back 8-4 in game 2, and then they mercy roll Vandy 12-0 so to take the series. Then they go to Texas State, and the Bobcats beat them down in San Marcos 9-8. Then they get Texas 9-8, and then 11-4, and then the game is canceled. So that's where that half game comes from. They get Houston 10-2, and that staff's probably getting fired. Then they go to LSU, and they sweep LSU at Alex Box, 10-4, 7-2, 5-2. So, again, the A&M schedule, you get the 15th and 16th place team on the road. That's part of your road schedule, right? Texas, San Antonio, canceled due to rain. They go to Florida. They get 2 out of 3 from Florida, and that's kind of allowed. Not that Condren is a tough place to play, but Florida's a talented team. I believe they lead the country with 15 quad one wins. But A&M loses game 1-9-2, but then they win 8-4 and 5-1. They get Tarleton State 9-7, and then Auburn gets 2 out of 3 at College Station. So, again, most of the road series for them were manageable, and the home series were toss-ups. So the schedule really worked in their favor. 18-5, they get destroyed in game 1. They lose game 2, 5-4, and then they bounce back and, again, nearly got swept at home, but they win 4-3. They salvage a game. Then they get Prairie View. RPI of over 300, 16-7. Last weekend, they traveled to Ole Miss. And again, Ole Miss under in Bianco is good in the month of May. I don't know what it is. Mike knows how to push the buttons, but in the month of May, Ole Miss always seems to kind of figure it out. Ole Miss gets them 5-3. They bounce back 18-5 as the Mercy Rule win, and then they lose 6-5. So the Rebels take the series. So again, you start working back through this. The Aggies have lost their last two series. They're also 6-5 in SEC home games. We're 8-4 in SEC road games. So they haven't been great at home against league opponents. And that's the thing, too. We talk about how unbalanced the schedules are. They're 37-12 overall. They're 16-10 in the league. Guys, they've won one more game than us. But the narrative, in many respects, is that this Aggie team is worthy of a top eight. I don't see a lot of difference in the resume. I think A&M's resume right now is slightly better. Slightly better. And so what does that say if we go to College Station and win this weekend? Well, it says we're better than A&M, right? And if we take 2 of 3, then we have 17 SEC wins. They have 17. They would be higher in the standings because, again, they didn't play that game against Texas, so because it's based off winning percentage. But with 17 SEC wins, and we would hold the tiebreaker over them. It's just interesting to note, right? It wouldn't officially be a tie, so I'm sure the SEC would give them the nod because of the winning percentage thing. But my point being is, in the eyes of the committee, especially a head-to-head series this late, it's a much higher visibility series because right now both of these teams are playing for seeding in the NCAA tournament. They both have the same stakes. And to go beat them at their place and then Mississippi State, let's say we win that series, State would have no less than 10 SEC road wins. It's crazy to think how much better we've been on the road. We've already won more games on the road in the SEC than we have at home. And we played 15 home games and just 12 road games. So you get one this weekend. I think you're pretty confident you can host. You may need to get one at a Hoover just to feel great about it. You get one, I think you're good. You get two, you're great. You get two and the traffic clears in the right way, you could be a top eight. Maybe 7 or 8, but it could be. Let's look at some numbers here. And big news this morning, Michael Early and I was fortunate enough. We didn't get an exclusive interview, unfortunately, but we were able to get A&M to work with us to kind of get us that video right away. But big news is their ace, Aiden Sims, not going to pitch this weekend. Oh, I say that. Michael Early's exact quote was that he wasn't going to start this weekend. He never said he wasn't going to pitch. Some media people ran with that, and you know what? That may ultimately prove to be correct, but that's not what he said. He didn't say he wasn't going to pitch. He said he wasn't going to start. Now, I don't expect him to pitch, but in the event that there's a wild game on Saturday and it's a rubber game and they're trying to win the series, don't be surprised if Aiden Sims is going to run out to the bullpen. And they said he's had some tightness the last couple weeks. He didn't have a great start last week. So they're just trying to sit him and make sure he's ready to go. But that's a very significant situation because, guys, he has started more games than anybody on the staff this year. 13 starts and 13 appearances. An ERA of 3.84. Staff high 68 innings pitched. He's allowed 13 jacks. It's one thing that I will say about this Aggie pitching staff. They are susceptible to both the hit-by-pitch and the home run. The only starter that they have announced is Ethan Darden, left. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and you know on this show, we absolutely believe in taking care of our mental health. The month of May is a reminder that whatever you're going through, you don't have to go through it alone. I tell you guys all the time, everybody needs somebody they can tell everything to. Life's a journey. Some days are good. Some days can feel overwhelming. Whatever's keeping you up at night, it's easy to feel like you may have to figure it all out by yourself. The truth of the matter is, no one has the corner of the market on good answers, and no journey should have to be taken alone. Having someone with you to listen, to understand, and support you can make all the difference in the world. Guys, I've had so many challenges in life, right? Guys, 2022 was a difficult year on me, and I relied on people that I trusted. And that's a network of people that I built up over decades. But the reality of it is maybe you feel a little alone with whatever you're dealing with. That's where BetterHelp comes in. Quality therapists that will work according to a very strict code of conduct. They're fully licensed in the United States. There is also the therapist match commitment. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. There's a short questionnaire that helps you identify your needs and preferences. And our 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means we typically get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from all of those tailored recommendations. You don't have to do it alone. Find support and have someone with you in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com. Ender, he's going to go on Thursday. He is 4-1 with a 3.33 ERA. He has made just one start on the year. And can you imagine being like, again, you're playing for a top eight national seed and you're trying to figure this thing out on the weekend? Who can pitch? Who can't? Everybody's a little tender, right? But Ethan Darden is a guy that just has not worked deep in the games. He has been primarily a long reliever. He pitched last week. That was his first start of the year. But just 27 innings pitched and 21 appearances. And he's averaging just less than a hit per at 23, allowed 10 earned runs, 20 punch-outs against 12 walks. So the numbers are not especially impressive. He's also had four hit-by-pitches. Teams are hitting 235. But that's a lefty. We'll have our pitching preview up for you in the morning before we leave for College Station. That's the only starter for sure. Now, if I had to kind of play out what I think will happen, Shane Sedeo is a guy that we know well. Former reliever, and they've made him now a starter. He's got 13 appearances this year, 12 starts. But he's 3-4 with a 6.39 ERA. Second most innings on the team at 62, but man, he's given up almost 80 hits. So well over a hit per. Struck out 72, walk 17. We've had some experiences with him. We've had some success against him. Other times he's pitched well. But teams are hitting 304 against him, and he's got seven hit-by-pitches. And then there's Weston Moss, another guy that has pitched a lot. 12 starts this year, 4-2 record with a 5.67 ERA. In the beginning of the year, everybody talked about how well that A&M was pitching it, but things have kind of gone south for them in recent weeks. Everybody is a little bit tender this time of year. So, again, they're not throwing one of their regular starters in game one. You're going to have Ethan Darden, again, a guy that doesn't work deep into ball games, going up against Tico. And so you feel like, hey, advantage should be ours. You know what? Well, that was the case last week, too. We won game one and then lost games two and three. That can't happen this weekend. We got to find a way to figure this thing out. And looking a little bit deeper here at Darden, Ethan Darden, the numbers are just okay, right? They're just okay. Season highs, he went 2 1/3 innings against Tarleton State. That's DeLong, right? And kind of looking at what he did last week, he pitched against Ole Miss. He went 2 innings and threw 34 pitches. The 34 pitches is the second most of the year. Against Arizona State in relief, 39 pitches. So he's basically going to serve as an opener. So then that's the thing you begin to think about if you're Mississippi State. How deep can we get into that bullpen on Friday? They don't have a ton of guys that have thrown a lot of SEC innings on the pitching side. It's certainly not with any effectiveness. Clayton Freshcorn, that's a guy that we faced him before. He has 13 appearances in SEC play. 0-2 with a 3.25 ERA. Giving up just over a hit per. Got a lot of strikeouts, not many walks. But as he is a guy that's hittable. Teams are hitting 271 against him. Gavin Lyons has pitched extensively out of the bullpen in SEC play. 14 appearances, no starts, but he's 7-0. 4.22 ERA. And another guy that's given up over a hit per. Strikeout to walk ratio is less than 3-1. Teams are hitting 290 against him. And again, four more hit pitches. Weston Moss, we talked about him. He's had 8 SEC starts. He's not, again, they're TBA in Friday and Saturday, but I expect Weston Moss will throw one of those games. He's 2-1 in SEC play with a 5.91 ERA. Giving up a hit per. Another guy, less than 3-1. Strikeout to walk ratio. Batting average against is 259. Shane Sedeo, 9 appearances, 8 starts in SEC play. He is 0-4 with a 9.8 ERA. 61 hits in 36 and two-thirds of an inning. He's given up more than a run per inning pitched. And he's right there at 3-1 strikeout to walk ratio. But guess what? Teams are hitting 370 against him. 370. And so you get a little deeper, and there's some other guys out there that have pitched just a little bit. They've had a handful of appearances. Grant Cunningham is another guy. 7 appearances in the SEC. He's 0-1 with an 8.56 ERA. Giving up 22 runs in 13 and two-thirds of an inning. Batting average against 367. So this is a Texas A&M pitching staff that has really struggled in SEC play, especially on the bullpen side, outside of Lyons and Freshcorn. You feel like, hey, if we can burn one of those guys in a win tomorrow, it sets up well for the rest of the weekend. Now, granted, our pitching on Sunday hadn't been the greatest in Game 3 the last 2 weekends. You know, that Game 3 against A&M may turn into a Church League softball game. I share these things because I think it's important to get deep inside the numbers. It's not just about the RPI. It's not just about the national rankings. It's not just about the SEC standings. Even though all of that is comparable, I think when you look at this, you realize offense is going to probably win this series one way or the other. Can State hit these back of the bullpen arms for A&M? Absolutely, but you got to get to them. Gavin Grahovec having a great year at the plate for A&M. Just an absolutely outstanding year. And that was the big loss last year. You know, that was one of those things. You know, you had Jace LaViolette and you had so many guys you counted on. But you didn't have Grahovec. You lost him pretty early. And Caden Sorrell was hurt a lot last year. And they have led this team this year. Grahovec hitting 354, 17 jacks, 68 ribbies. He also leads the team, second on the team, and hit by pitches with 12. Doesn't strike out much either. 34 Ks and nearly 200 at-bats. Caden Sorrell, big year for him too. 340 average, 22 jacks, 65 RBI, and also 10 of 14 in stolen bases. And again, that's a guy they missed a lot last year. And they got him back late, and that was a factor too. It wasn't just the fact that A&M had the coaching change and all the roster turnover. They had some stars that were banged up last year. And as a result, you can kind of pitch around LaViolette a little bit. Nico Pardita is hitting 317 with 12 jacks. Again, another guy. And they're very physical. There's no doubt about that. Jake Dewar hitting 308. He's got 5 jacks. Jorian Wilson's got 12 jacks. Bear Harrison's got 11. You know, they've got, you know, what's that, 5 dudes in double-digit home runs. And just behind him is Blake Bender up with 8. And then Chris Hakopian with 8. And Hakopian is banged up. It's interesting, too. You know, we talk about, you know, people kind of getting beat up. And, you know, this time of year, like Boston Kelner took a ball to the face. Going to try to play this weekend. Hitting 248, but a pretty good defender. Now, what's interesting is last week, Ben Royo got to play and went 7-for-7. And he's a guy that hadn't played a whole lot. He's only appeared in 7 games this year, only started 4, but he will start this weekend. But they've got, you know, 3 guys that have been kind of beat up on the infield. And, you know, that's just kind of how life is this time of year. But as a team, they're hitting 304. And again, they can swing it. Michael Early is the guy that has built a coaching pedigree on hitting. And granted, the non-conference schedule was not very challenging, right? I mean, that's the truth, right? There's a reason that you look at their numbers and you look at that, you know, that strength of schedule for non-conference for A&M is 209. And just so you know, that is the only team that has a higher non-conference strength of schedule in the top 20 is Georgia at 233. Yeah, pretty crazy. You'd almost have to get all the way out to number 30 to get Boston College. I mean, they have really beaten up on some bad teams. That's not to say they can't swing it. But they have benefited from playing against some, you know, some lesser quality clubs. Now, Grahovic still swinging it well in SEC play, hitting about 350. Jorian Wilson, very physical player, hitting 343. Caden Sorrell, 310. Bear Harrison, 309. And from there, it kind of drops off rather significantly. They're hitting 275 in SEC play, and their opponents are hitting 291. It's just one of those interesting things, too, you begin to kind of work through. As we get to the end of the season, people kind of are who they are. They've hit 57 jacks in SEC play. They've given up 52. They're 24 of 26 in stolen bases. They've given up 6 of 19. So SEC team's not really taking the extra bag against them. But, yeah, they are a team that's going to put the ball in play for the most part. They have struck out 247 times as a team in SEC play. Their opponent struck out just 224. And so, again, you look at the numbers everywhere around between Mississippi State and Texas A&M, and a lot of it's just very comparable. And so when I think about we're a team that appears to be getting healthy, Ryan McPherson is expected to pitch. He has not been listed as the Sunday starter. I think that's smart, especially with A&M going TBA on Friday and Saturday. I get so confused when we move the series up. But A&M doesn't know who they're going to pitch. We think we know who they're going to pitch, but they've had some guys that have been ineffective. But let's say, for an example, let's say Tico and Jack Bauer gets you a win on Thursday. Then you go into Saturday. What if you need Ryan McPherson on Saturday, or excuse me, on Friday, game two? What if you need to win that series? You have a chance to win the series on Friday. Would you not roll the dice and throw McPherson and get it done, and then give you a chance to sweep on Sunday? Yeah, I don't think you pitch around all that. I think having that possibility with Ryan. Is a guy that can probably go out there and go 2 to 3 innings to close out a game. He has that mentality. I don't rule out that possibility. And I think that's one of the reasons you don't announce him as your Sunday starter. Because, again, if you get a game one win and all of a sudden you get to the 6th or 7th inning in game two and you have a lead, to me it makes sense to go get Ryan McPherson. Because he is the consummate competitor. And again, he's going to be on kind of a pitch count. I figure he probably goes 50 to 60 pitches. Well, that ought to be able to get you home. And so, yes, if that's the case for me, and I know that it gets me the win on Saturday or gives me the best chance to win on Saturday, that's the route I'm going. And if that means that I got to start Charlie Foster on Sunday, if that means that I got to start Dane Burns or Maddox Miller or whoever, then that's what I got to do. But if fear goes in relief on Friday, then that means somebody else doesn't have to. Is that Maddox Webb? Is it Ben Davis? Right? So you've got some options there. I think not putting McPherson in that game three starting spot gives you the flexibility to use him whenever you need him. Because you feel like Tico can probably give you 6, maybe 7, right? If he shows up and pitches as well as he did last week, you feel even better about that. But the reality of it is, if we can somehow get a win on Thursday and just use a couple of arms, that sets up well for the rest of the weekend. And as we had, you know, the bats kind of went to sleep for us, you know, in games 2 and 3 against Auburn. And so that whole McPherson thing is just, you know, then all of a sudden you're better served having him start on Sunday to give you a quality start. Plus, it's his first week back. But to me, as a former coach, not at this level, obviously, I like the flexibility of knowing that Ryan McPherson has bullpen and closing and starting experience. But this weekend, it's all hands on deck, right? Because you're playing to put the finality on your regular season. And if you have an opportunity to get game two and take that series, that makes the most sense to me. And then you just figure it out in game three. You just figure it out. Because that's the thing. You win the first two. You've already done probably as much as you thought you could do and probably as much as you needed to. But all of a sudden, it sets up the possibility of a sweep. And if you get a sweep, guess what, guys? You got 18 SEC wins, and you might actually finish second and no worse than third in the league if you get the right results. So then all of a sudden, that sets you up for the SEC tournament where you get the double bye. So there's a lot at stake here. Not to mention the fact that, you know, finishing in the top four of the number one RPI conference in the country gives you the best chance possible to be a top eight national seed. So that's, again, that's one of the reasons I would leave right now if I could, right? I can't. I'm so excited to get there and so excited. You love to be playing meaningful baseball late in May. And that we're not playing to get into Hoover. You know, we're not playing to get in the tournament. We're playing for the possibility to host and then the remote possibility of being a top eight national seed. Again, I'm not expecting the top eight. I am expecting the host. But anything can happen this last weekend. If we get the results that we want from our club and then get some help around the league, then yeah, anything is possible. Well, most everything is possible. But yeah, the possibility of being a top eight still exists, but we've got to take care of our business first. You're not going to have everybody else take care of your business. You got to take care of your business, and hopefully the teams that you're invested in take care of theirs, and then that elevates everybody forward. All right, time for today's top 10 list, brought to you by closewithblair.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. His phone number, just between us girls, 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. I've committed that number to memory now. I don't have to look it up anymore. I just decided it's stupid to have to do that every time. But nevertheless, here we are, and I don't know what your needs are, but I know this. If you are renting a place, essentially you're wasting your money. It's true. Sometimes that's necessary at certain points in your life. Maybe you're not ready to plant some roots somewhere. But once you are, you need to get some equity built up, begin to build some generational wealth, have something to leave your children. Home is where the heart is. And I suspect your heart would probably beat a little stronger in a place that someday you could own. So whether it's your first home, your next home, your retirement home, perhaps that game day condo, or maybe you even need to refinance, Blair Chandler, the only name to know. Get his 25 years of experience and know-how working for you. He understands everything it takes to get you to the closing table. That's the name Close with Blair, right? He'd get you that pre-qualification letter. You'll see your real estate agent jump into orbit to find the right home and the right price point for you and your family. Be sure and check it out. We've had several Boneyard listeners that have closed loans with Blair, and I encourage you to be the next. All right. Assuming that I live for two more days. Dana and I will have been married 33 years. It's a long time. Truly is. A lot more better than worse. Hadn't always been, popcorn and rainbow farts. You know, you live together that long. At times you're going to rub each other the wrong way, but we've never rubbed each other the wrong way long enough that either of us decided it was time to call it quits. Just the reality of life. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's always wonderful. It's not. You know, it's always worth it, though. That's important to understand. And so, as I reminisced about our life together, and I remember an album, and I talked to a family about recovery last weekend, and I mentioned this album. It is one of, if not the last albums that I bought as a single man. I was obviously engaged, but prior to me getting married, this is an album that I bought. I have been a Duran Duran fan. as long as I have known who they were, right? And when I got clean and sober and Benny Bruce and I became even better friends, he was a Durante from the word go. And we were both highly anticipating the release of this album. It was originally called Duran Duran, but it is now called The Wedding Album, and it's pictures of all of their parents on their wedding day. And some of it comes from an instrumental. It was an instrumental song. They initially originally just kind of worked up a song, and then Simon LeBond wrote lyrics to it. And it's actually on our list, and it involved a member of the band kind of getting married kind of rather abruptly, and they jokingly called it a shotgun wedding. And so that in turn led to the quote wedding album. There are some tracks on here that you're very familiar with, and there are some other ones that perhaps you're not. But I'm going to rank my top 10. I think there's a dozen tracks on this album. I think that's right. Let me double check. There's no point guessing. What if we had a machine that gave us, there are 13 tracks on this album. What if we had a machine that would give us the information that we so desired? Thank you, Alexander Graham Bell / Steve Jobs. But my top 10 tracks off Duran Duran's wedding album. Number 10, it's To Whom It May Concern. And this is an interesting track. It's very Duran-y, right? But it's really just kind of about, you know, living your own life, you know, and like kind of dealing with the world. This album, of course, came out right around Valentine's Day of 93. I got married May 15th. So, again, not too long before I got married. And I can't say for sure it was the last record I bought before I got married, you know, because we were trying to save money for the wedding and the honeymoon and all that good stuff. So I wasn't just making a lot of extracurricular purchases, but this is one that I did get. Number 9 is actually a cover track of the Velvet Underground song Femme Fatale. And they kind of make it their own in many respects. It's not necessarily true to the original. They took the framework of the original and then kind of made it a Duran Duran song. The aforementioned Shotgun at number 8. It was called the Shotgun Song for a long time. There's a lot of instrumentation and samples, of course. Nick Rhodes is a genius, and much like Martin Gore on the Depeche Mode side, both of those guys historically have used a synclavier and kind of upgraded with the latest of technology, and so they were kind of ahead of the curve. Number 7, a little more of a dance track, it's Sin of the City, and it's a Nick Rhodes creation. It's one that I think you'll enjoy, maybe one that you can add to your running or workout playlist if you're so inclined. Number 6 is Breath After Breath. It's a song a little more of introspection, you know. One of the things that I've learned about life, as long as there is breath, there is hope, right? And this album kind of came out at a very important point in my life. I had been clean and sober, I guess, about 18 months or so. I think that's right. Not even that. I got clean and sober December 10th of 91. This came out February of 93. So, I'd been married or on my way to getting married. I'd been with Dana since July. I met Dana July 10th, 1992. And our first date was August 10th of 92. We got engaged October 7th of 92 and married May of 93. So you can kind of do the math. I wasn't even 2 years sober yet. And again, my recovery is maybe not the pathway for you, right? I hadn't always been the best of role models, but this is one of those tracks that just kind of reminds me too. You know, it's like you have to be grateful for what you have, and sometimes that's the next breath. And as a person that's been sick over the course of the last week, sometimes drawing those breaths are not exactly the easiest of undertakings. Number 5, another track, it's a little more on the dance side. It's Drowning Man. And it's a bit of a cult classic. There are a lot of people, of course, that have been fans of the band for a long time that kind of point to this track as an underappreciated deep cut. And if you like Duran Duran, I think you're going to enjoy that one. Now, number 4. And one of the reasons it's number 4 is it's one of my favorites on the album. Like, when I began to listen to this album, because back, you know, when you don't buy an album all the time, you know, back in those days, you know, back in the 1900s, you bought an album and then you didn't buy another one until you were kind of tired of your newest one, right? You kind of worn it out, or there was, you know, something new that came on MTV and you waited to hear a couple singles before you went and invested the 10, 12 bucks in a new CD. So you learned all of them. But this is one of those tracks that just right where I was in life, you know, again, not necessarily newly sober, but in a very committed relationship and committed to a new way of life. It's just one of those songs that there was just so much about this song that just made a lot of sense to me. It's just one of those songs you just kind of look at and you think, you know what? This is exactly where I am in the world. And it's none of the above. And to kind of give you an example of kind of why that song matters to me, I'm gonna look up the lyrics just because I think you need to know some of these tracks. And I was really living a life of purified defiance, right? That was very important to me, is I was not going to let anybody else tell me how to live or what to do. But basically, it's about learning self-reliance. It's about understanding that there's not going to be any search party to form to come save you. You're going to walk yourself out of the woods. And here's the lyrics, some of them. If I myself alone realize I never need to use no one, when it comes down to my soul, freedom puts my faith in none of the above. Right? There was a time I was so afraid of everything people around me said that I wanted to hide my face in the shadows. There was a time on a bed of nails I was dreaming a plan I thought could not fail, but no power under the sun could pull it together. I can take this attitude, got to show now, I've got to move on. God knows where I'm going to. It's a lonely, burning question. If I myself alone realize I never need to use no one, money, power, holy roads, freedom puts my faith in none of the above. There's a little more to it, but it's one of those things that was rather anthemic to me that I thought, you know what? I have got to do this on my own and with the reliance on my own higher power, who I choose to call God. Nobody can do this for me. And that's one thing that I can tell you about recovery in the 12 steps. It is the only thing in my life I have not been able to outsmart. I had to actually do the work. And that's really kind of what this song means to me, is that me and recovery in its simplest form is following a pathway that other people have carved out. And if I could just humble myself and not try to build a better mousetrap, if I could just do what I was asked to do, and I was willing to be honest with myself, that good things can happen. And now here I am, you know, coming up on, 35 years, right, of trying to prove them wrong. I'm going to do what you tell me. I'm going to prove that this stuff doesn't work. And here I am. All right, number three, the final single off this album, and I think it's one of the stronger songs. I think it probably should have been maybe the original single, but it's Too Much Information, and I love it. I love it. It's the first track on the album, and it's one of those songs, too. You can hear it in the club. You can hear it on the radio, and it's classic Duran Duran. Love it. Number two, this is the song you all know the album for, probably. This was the lead single, and I remember when they debuted the video on MTV, and I remember I was like, dude, Duran Duran is like so back, like this song, and it was actually the last song they recorded. The album was done, and then they decided, hey, I got another one, and it ends up being one of the biggest hits in Duran Duran's history, and it's Come Undone. And, of course, it's been covered by other people, Bad Omens, Red, many other bands. You know, who do you need when you come undone? There's just so much about this song from a lyrical content standpoint that is a kind of a writer's dream. And everybody knows it. Everybody knows this song. But number one, and it is one of those songs that is a timeless piece of my soundtrack to recovery. I've shared this with you guys before, and there are times even now, all these years later, when I think about where I have come in life, I'll put this song on and I just have a moment with myself. And I think about my children and I think about my marriage and my life and my job and all the things that I have today because of the fact that I make a daily decision to get up and not drink or use. It's Ordinary World. And it is one of those songs that just absolutely resonates with me. And there'll be sometimes I'll be out on the road and hours away from home and in the middle of doing something else, and my mind will just go back. And I think about living at 215 North 34th Street in Hattiesburg. You know, a little two-bedroom house, didn't have air conditioning. We had space heaters. We didn't have any AC. Dana and I at times would spray off on each other before we'd go to bed during the Mississippi summers. Have those, have those box fans in the window so you can get a little airflow going. But I tell you what, it wasn't always the best of times, but it certainly wasn't the worst of times. And I'm so grateful I had those times because it gave me a greater appreciation for the things that I have today. And I don't need all this stuff. I don't. There are times I walk around here and I think, you know, hey, we should probably do this. I just don't require that. At the end of the day, and this is one of the things that I hope that I have taught her over all these years of marriage and of love, is at the end of the day, I just want her. Right? I just want her. We're never going to win any awards for Better Homes and Gardens. Not going to happen. Matter of fact, we got so much grass to cut, you know. It just sneaks up on you, right? And I stay so busy. She stays so busy. When we are together, we just want to be together. And again, you know, by the time you guys listen to this, I'll be on my way to College Station. So I won't be with her on our anniversary date. And, you know, she's okay with that. You know, she understands I'm out doing what I love. And she loves the fact that I'm there. That I can be her eyes and ears. And I call her before every game, and we go over the lineup and just kind of talk about, give her a little pitching preview, that sort of stuff. It's what we do. But there are a lot of people that would look at my life from the outside in and say, you know what, man, Steve's got this and Steve's got that. Guys, the bottom line is this. I don't have any of this without her. And it's so interesting. You know, we talk about, you know, our children and things of that nature. And I had an ex years ago, that would kind of joke with me. One of my kids had done something amazing. I can't remember which one it was. And it says, I see all this stuff going on with your children. I wish we'd have had one, right? Which is a joking compliment, right? But also, too, I said, well, it took her, too, right? It took her. It took the both of us to create these amazing children. And so I share that with you guys just because of the fact that meeting her, dating her, marrying her, finding a way to always make it work, right? Always in the worst of times, just never letting go, right? And it hadn't always been easy. I mean, that's just when you were together, well, basically we have been together all of our adult lives, right? And I wasn't even old enough to buy alcohol when I got married. I got married at 20, you know, and not, at least not in Mississippi. I bought a bunch in Louisiana before then. But my point being in all of this is when I think about the pathology of my own life, my life changed in a very dramatic and positive way when I asked her out and she said yes. And it's one of those things. You look back at life and you look at the turning points and the pivotal points in your life. And I think of so many times, especially in the early going, when I was still so young and immature, that she was so incredibly patient with me. And then there are times later that I've had to be patient with her, you know? I mean, like, not trying to tell her story, but, you know, you get middle age and all of a sudden, you know, you don't have that youthful exuberance and all of a sudden you start seeing those miracles in the mirror that we call wrinkles, because they're the evidence of living, right? They bothered her a whole lot more than they bothered me, right? I don't even see them. She sees them all, right? But you got to work through that. There's just different phases in life. And, you know, we're in our 50s now. And, you know, we've got people our age, of course, that are dealing with some serious health issues, which it really, really bothers me because I think we're too young to have these kinds of issues. But that's the reality of life. But I love her, and I'll never have another wife. The only one I'll ever have. And that's one of those things that you begin to think about your life. And I begin to understand, you know, the odds, right? When I think about the odds, you know, what are the odds that I would stay sober? Well, not very good, right? Again, Betty Ford, their own material from a couple years ago, said that 1 in 25 people that need help get it. That's 4%. And then of those people, 1 in 25 have a period of sobriety of 1 year or longer. So 4% of 4%, right? And then, you know, what's the whole thing? You know, one in every two marriages fail, you know. And then, of course, a lot of those people that get divorced are never learned from that divorce. So they end up getting married two and three and four times, right? So they drive the numbers up. But my point in all of that is that I've never worried and concerned myself with the odds. I've just lived my life, right? I've just simply lived my life and done my best to be kind and loving to my wife and be supportive and loving to my children and to help as many people as I can along the way. That's my goal, right? And there have been times in my life that people have elected to declare war on me for one reason or another, and then I have to go win those wars. And then I kind of get back to doing what I want to do, right? I don't want to be the war chief. I'd love to be the peace chief, right? Let's just all live a life of peace and good happiness stuff and not have all this acrimony. But I'm not a guy that runs from a fight. I don't run to them. I don't start them. But I always do my best to end them. Because at the end of the day, I just want to be Papa Steve, right? I just want to be baby. I just want to be dad. That's really all I want to be. And I'll be Rose Bowl to some of you guys too. You know, those are the things that I value in life. And again, as I get to these milestones and I think about, you know, getting older and those kinds of things, it's the more you look back and you say, man, it's actually pretty incredible the ride that we've went on. And last night, you know, again, I've been sick. She's been a little bit sick. And last night we were laying down and I said, well, if we don't make it through the night, I want you to know it's been a hell of a ride. You know, and she said, it sure has, you know. And, you know, we're just kind of joking, obviously. But I live my life with that attitude of gratitude. And, you know, music means so much to me because it kind of, it's like a time machine. It reminds me from whence I've come. And when I put on this album, when I listen to Ordinary World, it is almost like getting, you know, a hug from God for me. Because I remember how disjointed my life felt. And then suddenly we're working through all this. Well, wait a minute. So she's the one? We're going to get married? This is the woman that's going to have my children? This is the lady that I'm going to make a life with, right? So all of a sudden, that kind of opens up for you. And you begin to realize, okay, I got to stop doing all this other stuff. Like, I got to keep that stuff behind me once and for all. And it enabled me to really just kind of let go. And it's one of those adages in recovery, say, let go and let God. There were times, like, God, the day that I got married, you know, I'm sitting there, like, by myself for the first time in, like, days. And I asked myself, am I doing the right thing? And I cried. And I was like, of course I'm doing the right thing. Right? So for like 30 seconds, you kind of second guess a little bit. And it's just like all of a sudden I could just like feel like almost the urging of my ancestors is like, go, go. Like, this is it. And what's crazy about that is after we left Parkway Baptist there in Natchez, we went to the gas station to gas up the head to Disney World. And it was a guy that said, hey, you guys just got married. We're like, yeah. And he pulled away and he goes, you just made the worst mistake of your lives. I mean, number one, what a crappy thing to say to anybody anyway, but especially somebody that just left the church, you know, because we got all the stuff on the car and all that kind of stuff. And I begin to think sometimes, well, how miserable a guy does that have to be? You know, two young people on the greatest day of their lives. And you want to go, like, lay a wet blanket on all that stuff. And so we just pray for him and just kind of move on. But it's incredible to me when I look back and think about moments like that, how the odds just didn't matter. You know, what mattered is the love we had for each other. And I've heard it said before, too. You go through these phases where it's not like, you know, that you fall in love and you stay in love forever. There are some phases in life where you just keep falling in love. And there are some days that you're just so proud to be with them. And it's just like with her being sick the last couple of days, going and running a spa and seeing how grateful she was to have me to go do that. You know, being a small business owner at times is almost like being an indentured servant. But it is what it is. And that's what the job required. So I did my stuff and I went and ran a spa, you know, and then here we are. And so, but there's no other place I'd rather be than providing value to her and her life. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up my friend, Roy Samanti. Yes, Roy Samanti at Dogmatic67 on X. You can find him on Facebook too. And you can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle, Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. We love Campus Bookmart. And why? Well, they got the stuff we want, right? Let's just kind of call it for what it is. We want more Mississippi State merchandise. On behalf of all the Bulldogs in your life, when it's time to buy us a gift, it doesn't matter if it's birthday, Christmas, Valentine's, Father's Day, Mother's Day, Amerigo Vespucci Day, whatever day, Boxing Day, whatever, get us Mississippi State stuff. We'll always think highly of you because you know us so well. And it takes this kind of the guesswork out of gift buying. Just buy us more Mississippi State stuff. Whether it be apparel, things decorate our office, diploma frames, whatever. Buy us Mississippi State merch, and the best place to get it is Campus Bookmart. Next time you're in town, go by and see their smiling faces. If for some reason you can't stop by, or game day is a difficult shopping day for you, or maybe you live out in the mission field and you want to support a Starkville business, which is always an A-plus activity, follow them on all forms of social media at Campus Bookmart. But find them online for your online shopping needs at campusbookmart.net and use promo code BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75 is absolutely incomplete. And buy yourself something too while you're there. Let's take a look back at the night that was in the Southeastern Conference. We talked about that there may not have been a lot of results that impacted us, but they did, because we moved up a spot in the RPI. More on that later. But, of course, the last week and last night of midweek games, of course there's going to be chaos considering how weird the midweeks have been this year. And I go back, I think it was Jay Johnson that said that, you know, basically what you're seeing, right, is this is where the portal impact is felt the most. Because used to you'd have like a young, talented freshman pitcher and you kind of work him up as a midweek guy. And then next year he becomes maybe your Sunday guy and ultimately a Friday or Saturday guy on that three-year progression plan. But what's happening is people just aren't hanging around. You know, it's like, hey, I'll just go somewhere else. I go to Kennesaw State and play. I go to Troy or UAB. I go to Memphis, right? Everybody wants to play now. So all of that is important to understand. But of course, the last Tuesday night in the regular season for the SEC, of course, you had upsets. And I don't know, maybe some of these weren't upsets. But Tennessee, no trouble at all. 11-1 mercy roller game over Belmont, who finishes 19. I guess they still got the weekend. 19-33 overall. So 14 games over 500 heading into the final weekend of the regular season. 9-12 in their league. Nick Abraham gets the win. He goes 5 2/3 of an inning, 2-0 on the year. Him, 4 Ks, 1 earned run. Garrett Wright, 2-for-4 with a solo shot for Tennessee as they win 11-1. Get 6 runs in the 8th to secure the mercy rule victory over Belmont. We talked about how Winthrop in South Carolina could be a bit dicey. Well, it was. It was. Winthrop jumps out 2-0 there in the third. Carolina answers back with 1. Winthrop tacks on 2 more in the 4th to make it a 4-1 ball game. South Carolina climbs back in with 1 in the 5th and a huge insurance run for Winthrop there in the 8th. And they win it at Founders 5-2. Now, I think it's fair to say, Monty Lee, great coach, didn't do enough to get that job. And South Carolina obviously has already been working behind the scenes to kind of put, you know, a list of candidates together. I am told there are some candidates of interest that have already kind of declined, but maybe not officially have just said, okay, I don't want it. But there are some other candidates out there that just are a little bit cagey about it, because with rev share there, a little bit of a dicey proposition, because South Carolina women's basketball is an annual contender and they want to remain an annual contender. Much of that rev share is coming at the expense of baseball. It's true. I mean, it just kind of is what it is. You got to kind of pick and choose what you're going to be good at. And if you're South Carolina, you feel like, hey, you know, we're filling up Memorial Coliseum just about every night. Our ladies have become a national brand. We're going to ride this wave. You can't blame them, right? But again, that success as an SEC middleweight comes at the expense of baseball. So you've got to go get the ascending coach. You got to get a guy, you know, maybe you go get Kevin Schnall. And I know a lot of people think that's the move, and I'm told that maybe it is, maybe it's not. Skylar Meade also in the mix there a little bit too. I had some people tell me Justin Parker may get an interview, but he's down the list. They want to get somebody with head coaching experience, and you want to get the ascending head coach. I don't think you can go hire a first-time head coach. But, yeah, we do expect that to be officially open once we get done at Hoover. Like South Carolina, as soon as they're finished, it's done, and then they'll announce a hire shortly thereafter. Probably – I suspect whoever they're chasing is probably in the tournament. It won't be as simple as us, but they're not going to be in the tournament. So, yeah, that's the first SEC opening, right? Obviously, it's got to get filled. Missouri, maybe that comes open too. Maybe. UT Martin, the Skyhawks, 2 games under .500, 25-27. With a winning weekend, they can secure a regular season winning record. They got a sweep. And if I saw a tweet yesterday, I think it was Chase Parham, it said that they've never had a winning record. So, I mean, obviously they're getting better. But not at Ole Miss's expense. The Rebels with 2 in the first and then 10. A 10 spot in the second. That tends to bode well for your outcome, right? And then UT Martin gets on the board with 1 in the third. Ole Miss answers right back with 3. They ultimately win the game 17-6. A lot of walks in this ball game by Skyhawk pitching. Ole Miss gets 17 runs on just 12 hits. But Ole Miss even made 4 errors in the game and won in mercy rule fashion in the seventh. And Jed Uttermark becomes the Ole Miss home run king. And congratulations to him. Jacksonville State. They sweep the season series from Auburn. How crazy is that, right? And Butch said, like when they played them before, he goes, Steve, they wore us out. Guys, Auburn held to 1 run on 6 hits. They didn't score until the seventh. It was 4-0 going into the seventh, and Auburn gets a single run across. And that's the game. Jacksonville State, now 22-5 in their league, 41-11. They are going to be in the NCAA tournament no matter what happens in their conference tournament. No matter what happens. They should win the tournament. If they don't, they're going to get an at-large somewhere. And I don't know that you want to see them. Right? And that's the thing I think about. Auburn's going to host. Alabama's going to host. I suspect Auburn will not want Jacksonville State in their regional. And I don't think you put them there. Maybe you send them to Alabama. Maybe. You know, we'll see. Southern Miss is going to have a regional. Do they send Jacksonville State in there? If you're Southern Miss, you'd probably be upset about that. Grayson Ash, the catcher from the Gamecocks, was 2-for-3 in the ballgame. And Northern Kentucky and Kentucky got canceled. You know my feelings about this. Nick Mangione and them came out and made a statement, so they had all these delays in travel and didn't get back until very late. Then you got the mandatory day off on Monday. They elected to cancel. It is what it is. I think you ought to play the game. That's my feeling. I think you ought to play the game. The Wildcats are 12-15 in the league. And, of course, you know, any arm that you can save for the weekend. And you see it all over college baseball. And how about East Carolina canceling the Campbell game on Monday? The game was scheduled to be put on Tuesday. They canceled on Monday. It's even worse than what they did 2 years ago. And John Gilbert is on the committee. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It's kind of a do as I say, not as I do. Right, I don't get it. I don't like it. Those are my feelings about it. You may feel differently, but that's how I feel. Let's take a quick look kind of around the league again. We talked about what our rooting interest was on Monday's show. Let me tell you what I think is going to happen, okay? Arkansas, and some people are like, hey, Arkansas could still host. Wait, hey, they sweep Kentucky, they're going to host, okay? 18 wins in the Southeastern Conference, they're going to host. And you know, the argument is, you know, Arkansas's RPI is 27. They got 3 quad 4 losses and a couple in the quad 3. Guys, this is not a hosting team. 34 wins, not a hosting team. There's probably a better chance of them finishing 500 in the league than there is at 18-12. 16-14 is not going to do it. It's not going to happen. Kentucky's RPI is 33. They won 30 games. You know, can Kentucky sneak in with an at-large? You know, it's going to depend on the conference tournament. So if you're Nick Mangione, you got to go into this thing saying, hey, we have got to do what we can to get ahead of Arkansas. We got to take care of business here and win these games. I think Kentucky is going to win at least one, possibly two. You never rule out the Dave Van Horn thing, but this Arkansas team is interesting. I mean, they truly are interesting because, number one, you had the most advantageous conference schedule in the Southeastern Conference, and you didn't take advantage of that, right? And some of these losses obviously have come at home. You know, I think last year they lost 4 home games. This year they've lost 12. Yeah. They're 8-5 in true road games. Okay, so that's not a bad number, right? However, not all of those have been Southeastern Conference games, right? Not all of them. It's what's so interesting, too. You go back and look, like, outside of, the season opening event at Arlington, like, that stretch right there. You know, they played those 4 games on neutral field. And, guys, they did not leave Fayetteville, Arkansas forever. I mean forever. Until they went to South Carolina on March 20th. It's absolute insanity how the schedule was put together. You know, it's so bad already on the non-conference side. But then, you know, again, you're trying to stack wins. But you go back and you look, you know, just them kind of finishing up, midweek event against Northern Colorado. It's incredible to think about where Arkansas was at 16-6 when so much of that early schedule was favorable to them. And you're just 10 games over 500 heading into your second SEC weekend. And again, those are the things I think that work against you. Number one, you played the most favorable schedule, and then you didn't take advantage of it. And so, you know, when you again, you start working through this, you say, hey, well, you know, they do have some road wins, Steve. Yeah, you're right, they do. But let's kind of break that down a little bit. You know, you got 5 losses away. Okay, 8-5. And we already talked about that they take 2 of 3 from South Carolina. So that's one of your losses at South Carolina, a team that's not going to make the tournament. You get swept at home by Florida. That's not great. They lose at Missouri State in 10 innings. That's not great. They lose 2 out of 3 at Auburn. Hey, no harm in that. You got one, right? And you get swept at Alabama. Not great. Not great at all. And then you lose the game to Missouri. So you had the benefit of South Carolina, Missouri, and Kentucky on your schedule. And let's be honest, Oklahoma is not great, but at least you got 2 out of those 3. So again, it was a very favorable schedule. And I just don't think you can reward them for being a mediocre team when they had such a favorable schedule. And again, this Kentucky team, they're fighting to get in. You know, people like Arkansas is fighting the host. I think Arkansas is in, but I think there's too much working against Arkansas to host. But I think if they sweep, I think they will. I just don't see it happening. I think State's going to take 2 out of 3 at A&M. That's my feeling today. And again, that may be my heart talking. But again, with so many of their players banged up, you know, you got one infielder that can't even hit a ground ball because he can't beat it out. You got another was hit in the face. You got another guy that had a big weekend last weekend, but he's only started 4 games this year. You know, they're a beat-up team, and they're a very tender pitching staff. I think it's an ugly series. I think after Thursday, it's going to be wild. But I think in the end, the State's going to have maybe one more bullet in the gun on the pitching side, thanks to Ryan McPherson. South Carolina's at Vanderbilt. I just like Vandy to win this series. You know, we got 3 wins over both of these guys. But I think Vanderbilt, again, Vanderbilt closer to making the tournament. Vanderbilt probably needs a sweep of South Carolina to finish 14-16. And then, you start working through the numbers here. You know, is that enough to make the tournament at 14-16? Well, they probably would need to win a game or two. And, you know, that's one of those things, too, with Vanderbilt. You know, Tim Corbin and those guys have always kind of tried to find a way to do well at Hoover. But the RPI is 74. There's no way that they get in. You know, maybe you sweep this weekend, and then maybe you get to the title game in Hoover. Maybe. And then you can kind of begin to think about the possibilities. But I think they've got to win the tournament to make the NCAA tournament. Ole Miss is at Alabama. And people are like, I'll never pull for Ole Miss. Well, then pull against Alabama. Because the best case scenario for us is to win the series against A&M, have Ole Miss win the series against Alabama, but not sweep. And then that keeps us ahead of Ole Miss and then moves us ahead of Alabama in the RPI. And it would have us and Alabama tied in the standings. We didn't play head-to-head, so I haven't done the feedback to see what the tiebreaker would be. It's probably highest RPI team of opponent in common. I haven't done the research to see what that is. But it could be Ole Miss. And we got four wins over Ole Miss. So, again, I hadn't done all the research. As we get back and kind of see, you know, I'm not going to speculate. Once we get back and see how it all breaks loose, then we'll talk about it. Missouri is at Texas. There's no way Texas isn't going to win this series. I'll be shocked if they don't sweep. But, again, they win two and they got 18 wins. They win three, they got to get 19. And if we can win the series against A&M, again, it's going to be easier said than done. I guess Texas is the number two finish. Texas, barring something unforeseen, is going to get a double bye in the SEC tournament and be a top eight national seed. And I don't think anybody would argue against that. Maybe some Aggies. Florida's at LSU. Guys, Florida is so interesting to me just because of the fact that Florida has good frontline pitching, but offensively they have just been all over the place. LSU at home last weekend for Derek Curiel. A lot of guys out there that are going to be doing some interesting stuff. It's going to be, you know, it's not going to be raucous crowds, okay, at LSU. It's not. Many of them have kind of given up on that. You know, they're like, you know, hey, we got to go to Hoover. And listen, we got a lot of great LSU fans that are friends of mine. They're going to go to Hoover anyway, right? Because they understand that's their only chance. They're not going to get an at-large. They're going to have to win, you know, the tournament. And they know this. They're going to have to win the tournament at Hoover. And you're not going to do a lot to maybe improve your standing this weekend. But maybe you can get some juice going to Hoover. I just think Florida probably gets two out of three here. And I think what behooves Mississippi State, what helps us, is for LSU to take a couple. We'd love for LSU to get two. I think they get one, but, man, you never know when the Cajun Voodoo and the Rally Possum and all that stuff's going to happen. You know, they're tied with us in the standings at 15 and 12. If we win two and they win two, it's going to be an interesting conversation. They have representation on the committee, obviously, in Scott Strickland. So, you know, the metrics would favor State, but, you know, Florida leads the nation in quad one wins, so they may get seated higher than us. That's why it's so important for LSU, for us to win two and LSU to take two. That gives us a game up on Florida in the standings and in the RPI. Tennessee's at Oklahoma. We've talked about this. We don't play Oklahoma. I like the way Tennessee is playing as of late. They've kind of figured some things out offensively. Oklahoma, of course, you know, lost the series to Arkansas. They're going to be home. I think Tennessee takes this thing. I think they take it 2-1. They're both 13 and 14. We just don't need a sweep either way. But if, you know, we want Tennessee to be the winner, obviously, because hopefully we want to get those Tennessee wins back to the quad one. And in Georgia and Auburn, I just like Georgia here, especially reeling after they win the big series, maybe relax a little bit, and they get beat by Jacksonville State. Georgia can really swing it. Auburn obviously has some really good pitching. You know, I think the pitching numbers favor Auburn. But I just, you know, I wonder, you know, with Auburn still trying to solidify a top eight, they probably need to get one. And I think they will. Obviously, if you're Mississippi State, you're rooting for Georgia because you want to overtake Auburn, because in a tie-break situation, we're a game behind them. if we end up even with them, they get the tiebreaker. So you want to win two more than Auburn so you can be a game ahead of them. And so in order for that to happen, Georgia's got to sweep them. I just don't think that's going to happen. I think Georgia wins the series, but I think Auburn finds a way to get one and solidifies themselves as the top eight. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. The best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, especially when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. We stayed there. We had a blast. So incredibly well-run place, right? It's the old renovated country club clubhouse out past the Highlands on 182, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. Whether you're bringing a work group to town and you just like to have everybody under one roof, it's a great option for you. Or maybe it's a ball game weekend for you. Maybe you're getting the whole family together. Maybe it's the cousins. Maybe it's all your siblings and your kids and your parents. And you're going to break bread and just enjoy each other's company. There's no better place to stay than the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Now, Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will auto-populate. You can check out all the amenities available to you and your guests, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area, plenty of parking. 6 bedrooms, 2, soon-to-be 3 baths. It's incredible. It is. We had a great time there. We did one night, we cooked. The next night, we ate out. Mom made breakfast one day. It was great. And it's so conveniently located. You can do your tailgating right then and there and not have to take everything to campus. Maybe give yourself a weekend off and just enjoy some family time under one roof. Now, when you Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, some booking options are going to pop up too. You can go Airbnb or Vrbo if you want to, VRBO, whatever you want to pronounce it. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That gets you 10% off your stay. BSR, the number 10, 10, gets you 10% off. So you're saving money at the premium place to stay in the Golden Triangle just by being a listener of this show. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, without any question. So our SEC availability report is delayed tonight. The administrator for the Southeastern Conference, Ben Beatty, is working the SEC track tournament, so things are a little bit delayed. So we won't have that on the show. We will have a full update over at Gene's page once it does pop. But just kind of looking around here, too, you know, how things have kind of played out here in recent days. Auburn is now up to the number 2 RPI in the country. Locked in. It's a top 8. I mean, barring just something totally unforeseen. They get swept this weekend. They may drop some, but I think they remain where they are with an SOS of number 1 and RPI of 2. Obviously, they go 16-14 in the league. They'll drop some in the RPI, but I think we're going to have some teams, obviously, that host in the SEC with just 16 league wins, and that speaks to the parity of the league. They've overtaken Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech, drops 1-3, but again, you know, they should be just fine. Really, no ifs, ands, or buts about that. You know, I think again, there's probably just a handful of teams you look at and say are totally locked in. They lost to Mercer last night, 12-9. So again, kind of a wild midweek in the ACC too. They will be at Boston College this weekend. So a road series against a nationally ranked team with an RPI in the top 30. Georgia Tech should take that series without any trouble. And they'll end up again somewhere in the top 5 in the RPI. Very safe, right? We've already discussed Texas. We talked about North Carolina at 5. North Carolina will be at NC State this weekend. We'd love to see the Wolfpack win. Will that be enough for State to overtake them, though? That's really the question. 20 wins in a Power 4 conference, a baseball-crazy conference like the ACC, they're going to be a top 8. They get 1 this weekend, they're going to be a top 8. They get 2 this weekend, they're going to be a top 8, right? And so I think short of them getting swept, they're going to stay ahead of Mississippi State. I just call it math or whatever. But they don't have a quad 4 loss. I think they got a very solid resume. So, again, I think the top 5 are largely set unless Auburn gets swept, and they could drop a little bit. Florida State okay? They got Miami this weekend. And they're at 7 right now in the RPI with a strength of schedule of 5. So pretty solid numbers there. They win this weekend. They get one. That's 18 wins in the ACC. Big numbers. They win two. They get 19. They sweep. They get 20. So Florida State, I think, is a bubble 8, but obviously a team that has some upward mobility. USC, again, is at 8, and they play Oregon this weekend, and again, 0 wins against the quad 1. There's just no way they can be a top 8, even if they take this series against Oregon. I think that's where Georgia goes, and people would say, but Steve, you think the SEC champion is going to be the 8 seed? I think they're 7 or 8. I really do. And again, if Ole Miss can beat Bama, Bama drops out, which allows some upper mobility. I think if it's between Georgia and Mississippi State, obviously Georgia would be the 7, State would be the 8. And I think really the same could be said for A&M. I think State and A&M are playing for the 8 seed. That's what I think. Somebody has to be the 8. Is it Southern Miss? Okay, Southern Miss is currently 9 in the RPI. However, they got Georgia Southern this weekend. We've talked about that extensively on this show. RPI of 209. So even with the wins, they're going to drop a little bit. It's because 3 games against a 200 RPI, and it's not going to be significant. Southern Miss is not currently expected to be a top 8. They want to be. But I think the RPI works against them. And obviously Georgia is going to leapfrog them. So technically, if you look at this, they're right now at 10. And you've got State at 11, A&M at 10 officially. One of those two teams is going to win 2 games. And I think that team will leapfrog Southern Miss. And again, I don't think you can give it to USC. So I think the best case for State is that we're going to be the last top 8. And we have to win this series and maybe get a little help, right? Maybe get a little help. But it's right there for the taking. Now, we've talked about Florida, Ole Miss, and again, Nebraska. You feel good about Nebraska. And again, you know, the college baseball media loves like the upstart. You know, Nebraska is one of those teams that they'll play at Minnesota. They beat Creighton last night. That's 28-22 Creighton. And then now they go to Minnesota, who is at 91 RPI. So there's not a lot of juice there to give them upward mobility, but I think there's enough there for them to just kind of maintain and be a solid host. Then you get a little deeper, like at Wake Forest. Okay, Wake Forest is currently 16 in the RPI. They're 7-14 against the Quad 1. They don't have the Quad 4 loss. They got 2 in the Quad 3, but they're 14-13 in the ACC. And then, obviously, they still have an ACC series to play at Duke. And Duke this year hasn't been great. 24-28, 89 in the RPI. So that's not going to help the Wake Forest resume much. The one thing you could say is, hey, we ended up, say if they sweep that, we went 17-13. And then maybe Wake sneaks in as a host site. And when you begin to compare, you know, resume to resume, them against Oregon State, you know, Oregon State's won more games, but they're 17 in the RPI with 3 quad 4 losses and just 3 quad 1 wins. And how many years are you going to be able to prop them up as an independent? They're not as good as they were last year. There's a lot of talk about, you know, West Virginia. Does West Virginia find a way to sneak in at 15 or 16? You know, that's an interesting dynamic as well. When you got to run the numbers here, because they're going to be at TCU. Excuse me, they're going to host TCU, which is RPI 42. So that would give them, I guess, the opportunity, if the traffic clears a little bit ahead of them, they could possibly sneak in. And you got Oklahoma, obviously, at 13-14 in the league. The best they can finish is 16-14, but the other metrics kind of work against them a little bit. 9-14 against the quad one. Again, it's going to be a tough weekend this weekend, I think, for them, because there's just so much at stake here. But 31-18, you know, they're nowhere close to 40 wins. I think it's going to be tough. Now, Oregon is an interesting one, too. they could actually benefit from the fact that USC is a single-digit RPI. Let's say Oregon wins that series. Well, then that makes them 20-10 in the Big Ten. And because of the fact that SC is 8 in the RPI, two wins over a top 10 RPI team could move Oregon within striking distance of hosting. So my hope is, by kind of breaking this stuff down for you, it kind of makes you realize that Mississippi State is in a pretty safe position, provided we win one, and certainly if we win two. If we win one, that gives us 39 wins, 16 wins in the SEC, and then of the 16 win teams, the metrics kind of favor us over some others. Now, of course, Florida, if they win the series, that gives them 17 wins and would give them, basically the same standing as us, and we don't play head-to-head, but they also have the nation's leading quad one win. So, again, I think we feel good about Florida hosting, provided they don't get embarrassed this weekend. Because there's a lot of teams right there, but I think once you get really in the top 15, you feel pretty good about where things sit. And Ole Miss obviously has a lot to gain and a lot to lose. You know, does Ole Miss get a hosting opportunity? And again, you look at this situation with Ole Miss, Georgia's behind them in the RPI, and of course with two wins, I think they leapfrog them, but Ole Miss has some upper mobility too because of Alabama's RPI. But Ole Miss is 14-13 in the league and can do no better than 17-13. If they sweep this weekend, I think obviously Ole Miss is in a great position. But as the pecking order kind of lays out right now, again, Georgia at 15 in the RPI kind of moves everybody down from 9, right? So that would technically move Ole Miss back to around 14. And so you got to wonder, how many SEC host sites do you have? Well, Auburn, right? You feel great about that. You know Georgia's going to get one, that's two. Texas is three. Alabama, you feel confident about that, that's four. A&M and Mississippi State, 5-6. Florida, 7, right? So are you going to give the SEC 8 hosting sites? And if I had to call it today, I say Ole Miss is probably the odd man out. Because of the fact Mississippi State has the better metrics against them and the head-to-head. Ole Miss does have the head-to-head over Florida because they won at Florida. But every other metric favors the Gators. So, again, barring a sweep from Ole Miss, I feel like Ole Miss is probably the strongest number two. I think they end up as the odd man out. And I don't think they're going to give the state of Mississippi 3 host sites. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think that works against Ole Miss, too. So then you begin to kind of wonder, too, where does Ole Miss end up? Let's say they win 2 out of 3. Do they send them to Southern Miss? Maybe. Is it number 2? Do they send Ole Miss to Florida State or North Carolina? You know, those are all things that you've got to consider. So there's a lot at stake, and what we will do next week is we'll provide daily updates as we get into the SEC tournament and just kind of let it all play out, and we'll talk about what it all means. And so, again, program reminder, we won't do a Friday show. I'll just wait and do it on Sunday once we know what the SEC shakes out to be, and then we'll get into kind of like previewing day-to-day what's going on in the tournament, right? And so we don't know when we play. We don't know who we play. We don't know what seed we are. All that will be fleshed out this weekend. And in less than 12 hours, I will already be on the road to College Station, Texas. So we will provide you in-person coverage direct from Mississippi State, Texas A&M. We will have boots on the ground for you there. We'll update you of everything that we learn as we go. And, we'll, of course, we'll have full coverage over at jeanspage.com. So, be sure to just kind of maintain, just checking in with us, you know. And, again, we provide all the big room stuff for free, all the post-game interviews for free. And you got to think, too, like, sir, sometimes we're the only people there. But rather than put that behind a paywall, we want to be your source for Mississippi State news. And we actually make the effort to be there because if, number one, we think you deserve it, we think our program deserves it, and we know that our coaches and players do, we want to always be the genuine article and not just covering off TV. I mean, it's call it a character defect of mine or whatever. I don't believe in that. And, you know, sometimes with some events we have to, we only have enough staff and there's only so many hours in the day. But when we can be there, we are going to be there. And I can't wait to be there. I think this is a very, very big series. You could argue it's maybe the biggest series of Brian O'Connor so far, the Brian O'Connor era. And because of the fact that we've had some big opportunities that we didn't cash in and some that we did, it's made this a really big series. Because in the end, if you win this series and things go the way you want, you could be a top eight. You could be. Not expecting it, but you could be. But I think also, too, you validate yourself as a regional host for the first time since 2021. I think that's an aspect of this that's got to be considered, too. You know, we hired Brian O'Connor to host postseason baseball at Duty Noble Field. And now here we are on the precipice of clinching the right to do that. That's what makes this series so big. And again, this is an A&M team. It's very talented. They're well coached. They're a little bit beat up and maybe they're fading a little bit. But at the end of the day, those SEC wins count the same, no matter who they're against when it comes to the SEC standings. But they just mean a little more right now because everybody is finalizing their resume for the postseason. So let's be sure to kind of keep up with each other. And we look forward to being down there to provide you in-person coverage. If you hadn't done so, go to DutyNobleBook.com. You get signed copies of all of my sports titles. That includes Flim Flam, Alpha Dog, Stark Villains, Dog Pile, and The Dude, the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls, which is still the book that I get the most questions about. Very grateful for that. Come float with us at True Rest Float Spa, Starkville, 662-268-7601. You can speak directly to my lovely wife, Dana, and let her know that we talked about her on the show. Cool. And she can get you lined up and come float. And it is by appointment, so be sure to call and make the appointment. Or you can book online. If you do book online, be sure to check your email because there is a waiver that you got to fill out and some very helpful information. And come join us over at jeanspage.com. We'll see you guys on the other side. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.